I am 100% on board with people making progress and not worrying so much about perfection. It is maybe less sexy to be focused on something more, so pragmatic, but it is truly important. I would rather have 10 people go semi-vegetarian than one person go vegan, because those 10 people are going to mean more animals saved. Hi, I'm John Oberg, and you're entering a world gone good.
Well, hello, my name is Steve, and this is the place where we highlight everyday people making good happen each and every day. Welcome to World Gone Good. Wondering what kind of good you can make happen? Here's something super easy and free you can do right now, and that is share us this very episode on your social media. Help us spread the good word. We appreciate it more than you know, and for doing so, we say, as always, thank you. Today we begin with a quick flashback to our 100th episode, where our good guest Emmy winner from CBS Sunday Morning, Faith Saley, had this to say.
I mean, in 100 episodes, I don't know the count, but there's a lot of animal rescue and a lot of veganism.
Yep.
Is this planned? Let me start with that.
I love animals and I'm vegan. And this is a show about making the world a better place. And I don't want to be preachy about it, but we cannot continue to live on the planet the way we lived on the planet 50 years ago. We have to make changes.
I want to say about you and your guests, somehow y'all never seem preachy. You never approach these subjects. None of you. It's kind of implausible, but it's true. Nobody ever shames anybody who's listening. So kudos for that.
Yeah. So we don't shame anyone here. That's not what the show is about. Our goal is to inform in a good way, even. And sometimes, especially when the information might be a little difficult for you, our good listener, to hear. And our hope is that it will spark something in you to make some good change in your own life, just by opening your mind, your heart, and your soul to hearing it. That all said, I humbly accept Faith's assessment with a big smile on my face, and I'm reminding you of it right now because our good guest on this very episode has the same goal. His name is John Oberg, and his mission of enlightenment includes inspiration. He wants to inspire you, me, all of us, to do the same. This one is for the animals, the planet, and for all of us who are ready to make the good connection and make some good change happen. John Oberg is a man that loves animals. That's it. Yes?
Yes, you got it. I'm a simple man.
So that's pretty much it. We can just wrap up this whole chat. This is going to be the shortest episode I've ever done. It'll be a 48-second episode. What is it about animals that you love so much?
The reason I love animals is because they are innocent. They are emotionally complex. They are just beings deserving of our compassion and our consideration and our respect. And I've grown an affinity for them over the years. And I have just looked at the world that we've created for animals. And it's shocked me that the things that are happening to animals are legal and essentially ignored. And it is what I think to be my life's duty to turn that around.
When did you have that moment that you were like, this is my calling?
I didn't have a light bulb moment. And I think that light bulb moments are a bit overrated and overhyped. I think that what really happens is a series of significantly smaller life events that happens over time that leads you to become the person you become. And for me, there was a variety of things that happened from a young age. I got my start doing companion animal rescue with my mom. We would rescue stray cats, and spay and neuter them. We would protest deer hunts together. But it wasn't until around 20 years old or so that I actually decided to pursue this work full time. And it's the best choice I ever made. What the final straw was that I was in Finland. I was walking around downtown Helsinki. I stumbled across this market, this open air market, and this guy was selling reindeer meat, which sounds bizarre saying it now in 2024 as a vegan for like 14 years. But back then, about 15 or so years ago, I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. And I befriended the guy. He told me to come back at 5 o'clock when he was shutting down. He'd give me whatever's left over. He could tell that I was traveling on a shoestring budget. So I went back and he just started filling a garbage bag with the leftovers for me and he handed it over to me. I slung it over my shoulder and then we kind of befriended each other and he said, hey, I'm going to the library if you want to join me. And so we walked to the library together and on the way to the library, he's talking about the activism he's involved with and I tell him I want to be an activist. And he says, what kind of activism are you interested in getting involved in? With John. And I said, I want to be an animal activist. And he stops dead in his tracks, looks at me and he says, if you want to be an animal activist, you should really think about the fact that you have a garbage bag full of reindeer meat slung over your shoulder. And up until that point in my life, I swear to God, I had never made the connection between my love for animals and my desire to do whatever I could to make a better world for animals. And the animals who I chose to put on my plate. And that was the final moment for me. And I shortly thereafter went vegetarian and then eventually vegan.
That's amazing. So there was a little bit of a light bulb, a teeny bulb, maybe a 20 watter, because you made the connection. I made the connection too. January 1st, 2014. I've been vegan since then. I will admit, as I've admitted on here before, I've had eggs a few times over the years, but I've cut it. I just woke up one day and said, let me see what would just happen. If I, I love animals so much, what am I doing?
Amazing.
It is. And it's, and I have to say really quickly, do you think that you are, because I get this a lot, you think you're more evolved than I am. And I'm like, I don't think I know. No, just kidding. do you think that you became more evolved in that moment?
Evolved is an interesting word. I guess evolved implies progress. And I feel like I did make a lot of progress. And what I did by becoming vegan was I matched my behavior with the ethics that I already had. So I don't really think that, it's not like I, accomplished a PhD. It's not like I did something that maybe others can't do. This is something that basically everybody can do. And so I feel like in a way I did evolve and I can say, yeah, you know what? I made progress in the way that I chose to eat and I'm so happy that I did because this makes a difference for dozens or hundreds of animals every single year. And Steve, I'm curious, when you went vegan in 2014, what was the reason? Was it just you woke up one day and said, I'm going to do this based on principle? Or were you exposed to some sort of content beforehand that made you start thinking about your food choices more? What was the reasoning?
It's a fun story. I'll tell you a condensed version. My boyfriend, fiance, who became my husband on December 28th, 2013, had gone vegan 4 or 5 years prior because he read Kathy Freston's New York Times best-selling books, including the Lean In, which was the main one that affected him. And we were like a household where he had vegan pans and I had meat pans. He had vegan plates and I had meat plates. And it was getting to the point of ridiculousness. Now, we got married on the 28th of December. We went out to a steakhouse on the 31st with friends. New Year's Eve, I had my final steak. And I just looked across at him and saw him eating sides. And I thought, what are we doing? I just made a commitment to you. And how hard could this be? And then I started thinking of like, well, let me just try it a little bit because it's worked for him and he didn't die. And we went ahead and I started slowly. I leaned into it. Now, hilariously, many years later, here in Santa Barbara, where we moved to, I bumped into Kathy Freston, literally bumped into her in a restaurant. And Jim was waiting outside for me. We had gotten food to eat outside and we were waiting. You know, I just placed the order at the counter and I said, hey, your biggest fan is outside. I go, he's a little bit of a stalker. Don't be too scared. And she laughed. And I said, would you mind coming out and meeting him? And she said, I'd love to. And so the woman, person, being who got him to go vegan is now a friend of ours. And it's funny how things just go in the travels and the circles that they go and the things that inspire you.
That is incredible. I love the full circle aspect of that story. And it's, I feel like I see circles in lots of different ways in this movement, whether it's a story like that or just the web of how, you know, we're all sort of connected. My favorite circle in the vegan world is just the circle of compassion that becomes expanded when you choose to live and eat in a more compassionate way. I think that this is a capacity that everybody has. And whether it's to create a better world for animals or to support your loving partner like you did, Steve, or whether it's for some other great reason like helping the environment, helping human health, etc. And we can take this circle of compassion that we have for that, you know, within that circle, there are numerous animals in there, like cats and dogs and maybe some wildlife like dolphins and whales and maybe deer and bunny rabbits, and expand that to include pigs, cows, chickens, fish, crustaceans, and so on, so that we can get the way that we eat and the way that we live to match these ethics that we already have.
I think something really key you talked about, because I talk about it on here a lot, is the environment and the planet. And I've spoken about this on here, and I'm not an expert either. I don't have a PhD. I don't even have a master's. I'm somebody who lives a life with a rain barrel, a composter. We drive one car. We're vegans. I have skatey 8 dogs in this damn house. And trying to do my part for the future. Do you think that that is another aspect that people can connect more to, especially when we see what's changing in the environments, when we're mowing down whole sections of the rainforest to put cows on them, to kill the cows and eat the cows?
For so many years growing up, I love the environment and I considered myself an environmentalist. And I thought about the, you know, horrors that were happening to forests and to waterways and to the natural landscape. And I thought, this is just horrendous. I've got to do whatever I can to make a difference for that. Unfortunately, my desire to do that didn't actually lead to any real action besides maybe, you know, go green bumper stickers or something that I might buy as a kid or a teenager. But, you know, if you fast forward a little bit and I eventually went vegan for the animals. And around that time, I also learned of just how beneficial going vegan for the environment is, because the horrendous cost of animal agriculture to the environment, it is just mind-boggling. I can never say this word. It is just wild how harmful animal agriculture is to the environment. And for anyone who considers themselves an environmentalist and they want to do what's good for the environment, they should definitely take a look at their food choices, because that is one of the top ways, if not the top way, they are impacting the environment.
Are we lazy?
Are we lazy? I think it's a combination of lazy, but also ignorant. Most people don't truly understand the costs of the choices that they are making. Most people like to think that animals live decent lives with one bad day. Steve, you and I understand that this is not the case. Farm animals and animals raised for our consumption and exploitation are essentially suffering from the moment they're born until the day they die, which is usually months or years. And it is up to us to make a difference for them. And I don't think that most people just understand all of this suffering that's happening and say, oh, I'm fine with it. It's cool. I think most people say, that is really horrible. I wish I could do something. And they may make one slight change here and there, and they think that's enough. But you know, luckily, when people see this information more and more, they are more and more likely to make more and more changes. It takes time. Change is a slow, piecemeal process, both on an individual level and a societal level. And so as animal advocates, it is important that we have a certain degree of patience. And also remember that we were on the same journey that they were on maybe months, years, decades ago, but we were on that journey. So it's really important for us to put ourselves in the shoes of others when we are thinking about this important issue.
I think you make a key point here, because two things. One is many people are terrified of change. And did we learn that in the lockdown and the pandemic? We sure did, because change was put right in all our faces. We were forced all to be in the same moment at the same time and change our behavior. And a lot of people had a problem with that. The second thing you're making a very great point about, which we talk about in here, you know, and I use this analogy, and I'm going to get to this too with you, because I have a specific question about this. We go to the gym, right? I just came back from the gym. I've been going to the gym since I was 19 years old, everybody. That's a long time. And you can't go to the gym one time and go, there, I'm done. I'm in great shape now. I went one time, right? It's a progressive way of going and building and learning as we go, all the different things that we can do and all the different challenges that are in that space. And I use that analogy for a reason, because one of the things you have on your website, it speaks about some of your other free time activities include powerlifting, traveling, and playing soccer. And the number one thing that I get from my own mother, where are you going to get your protein from if you don't eat meat?
I really love how this question is just so prevalent. And I think it always will be. And you know what? I think there's a reason we're always asking this question, and it's because the meat industry, with its millions or billions of dollars of advertising over the years, have done a really great job of pounding the protein myth into people's heads. People thinking, oh, you need to eat animals in order to get enough protein. But there are so many examples of vegans who don't just survive, we thrive. We absolutely thrive on a plant-based diet, and this includes getting enough protein. For me, I eat 180 grams of protein per day on a plant-based diet. Now, not everybody needs to eat 180 grams of protein per day. I have certain goals in which lead me to consume that much. But the point I'm trying to make here is how easy it is to access that protein as a vegan. For me, I get protein from a variety of sources. I get it from soy milk, from tofu, from tempeh, from lentils, from beans, from protein powder, from plant-based meats. So you can get it from so many different places. And luckily we live in a world now where you can. You know, if you were to try to go vegan 30 years ago, it's going to be tougher. Yes, it's going to be tougher. You might have to try and find the one Asian grocery store in your city that might carry tofu.
Right.
But, you know, in 2024, we can get all of this stuff from basically all of the grocery store chains that exist. And so you no longer need to suffer a proteinless diet as a vegan.
I had a really good friend in college, and I'm talking, I went to college, and we're talking 1989, 1990 time. And she was vegan back then.
Wow.
In Tucson, Arizona. And she was Buddhist. And she was a white American, okay, whose family was a Buddhist, you know, that was their religion. That was their belief system. And we used to watch, and I was just like, where are you finding, you know, it's what you just said. But now it's so much easier. And one of the funniest things ever is during the panic that happened at the grocery stores right before the lockdown, I went to the grocery store. I took my almost then 90-year-old next door neighbor. She's now 93. God bless her. She's still going. And I took her to the grocery store, and people were in a panic grabbing everything they could. And there was this woman standing there, and she was on her phone, and she's staring at all the fruits and vegetables. And there's a whole vegan section, right, of food there. And she's on her phone in a panic, and she goes, "There's no food," into her phone, to whoever she was talking to. And I was like, oh, there's food. No, there's, I wanted to be like, there's, I wanted to go over and like check, like, can you see, like, to get like a pen light? It's all right here. Like, the food is here. And so that's a key thing, because I think a lot of people think this is so hard. It would be so hard. It would be so hard. It's not as hard as, again, here's my analogy. It's so hard to get into shape. Well, you have to physically go and do something to get into shape, and be at the gym, be it a walk, be it a swim, move. You can sit and tell yourself, I can't do it, as long as you want. But until you take those steps and you walk the walk, that's when it begins.
I love how you phrase this, Steve, because it's something I've really thought strongly about for a long time. And truly, what I believe that the hesitancy people might have isn't the change itself. It's getting up the courage to actually make that change. Once you do it, you will be like, oh, this is much easier. Think about how much, you know, for those who are listening, who go to the gym or have gone to the gym for periods in their life, think about how hard it was to go that first time. But then think about the second day, the third day, the 18th day. So it gets so much easier, like astronomically easier, after you just do it. So it's the same thing with veganism, or at least just moving, or at least just moving towards that direction by deciding to go vegan, or to at least consume more vegan food. It all starts with that first decision. And if you're listening to this and you are at all inspired, just go do it. Just go do it. Maybe make dinner tonight. Maybe make a vegan dinner tonight. And that will be your first time. And then every time after this, it's going to get easier.
And that's where Kathy Freston comes in. I've had her on the show, and she's a friend of mine, so I can talk all about her. She lives about 10 minutes from us, and we go to her lovely house, and she comes over here, and we have wonderful times together, because she talks about, and her book is literally called The Lean In. And it's not always about overthrowing everything we know and starting fresh. Sometimes it's just about doing a meatless Monday and starting there, and then doing a Wednesday situation, and then a Friday, and then you're 3 days a week. And she writes in her book about, we don't need a planet full of perfect vegans. We need everybody doing a little bit of their part. And the same is true of anything in life. And I think it's like, when we all get on board for that, and I wanted to hear how you feel about that, if we all get on board of just leaning in a little bit towards a better world.
I am 100% on board with people making progress and not worrying so much about perfection. You know, it is maybe less sexy to be focused on something more so pragmatic, but it is truly important. I would rather have 10 people go semi-vegetarian than one person go vegan, because those 10 people are going to mean more animals saved. That is truly all that matters to me, is reducing as much animal suffering as possible. And by getting people to lean in, it's huge. Not to mention the fact that when people lean in, they are much more likely to take that second step, that third step, the fourth step. If we as animal advocates only demand all or nothing to go from eating meat to going vegan overnight, that is setting people up for failure. Some people will successfully do it, yes, and kudos to them. But overall, over the course of time, you are going to make much less impact than if you were to encourage people to make steps that work for them. And it's really important to be sustainable, and to be sustainable in the way that you are eating and living. And so for when I'm talking to people who are interested in this, you know, I give people a few options, and I say, you know, if you mess up 2 weeks in and, you know, you accidentally eat something you didn't mean to, don't just throw in the towel and say, screw it, this isn't for me. Just keep going. It's fine. We all make mistakes. It's really about progress, not perfection.
Okay, let's talk about progress and not perfection. 1 billion views on your social media platforms. How the hell did you do that? And how long did it take? And what was your goal? Lots of questions here. How'd you do it? How long did it take? And what was your goal, John?
Yeah, Steve. So what you're referring to is the number of views that my posts have gotten on social media over the years. And the reason that I've gotten so many views of my content is because it's been everything I've focused my energy on for a decade or so. Essentially, I got my start in vegan activism, handing out leaflets on street corners and college campuses back in the early 2010s. And I loved it. I handed out almost 500,000 leaflets to individuals and felt great, felt very impactful. But then my efforts moved into the social media world, and I realized I could reach that many people in a single day by utilizing Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and other social media platforms effectively. So my theory of change is the more people who see and hear about the experiences that animals are forced to endure at the hands of humans, the more people who are likely to change their behavior as a result. And so I have just ground away at being as efficient and effective as possible in getting that message out there, which is why I've had a lot of views on my content. And it's, you know, it's very important because, like we've kind of been alluding to here, most people just don't truly understand what's going on behind the closed doors of factory farms and slaughterhouses. And fortunately, social media provides us this opportunity like we've never had before, where we can slam open those doors and those gates of those factory farms and slaughterhouses and shine a light on the abuses that Big Ag has done such a fantastic job of hiding from the general public for so many decades.
But you have a mix now, especially on Instagram, of, I don't want to call them your adventures, your, it's a horrible word to use, of your trips to these slaughterhouses and these horrible places. But at the same time, you mix it in with going to rescues and showing and highlighting all the great work the rescues are doing. So how do you find that balance in yourself, and how do you find that balance in what you want to put out there?
The world is a very, very dark place for animals. But if our social media presence only shows the dark side, that is going to be make it very difficult for us to inspire people. So I find it to be much more effective to post a blend of content where you're showing the dark side and not shying away from it, but you're also talking about the bright side. And you're also getting the opportunity to you know, teach people things about animals that they otherwise might not know, like their capacity for joy, their extreme intelligence, the other kinds of elements that you just wouldn't see animals experience. And it really is amazing to see animals experiencing joy on an animal sanctuary versus experiencing nothing but misery and agony on a factory farm, like in a gestation crate or in a battery cage, where they're in such a small confined space, they can't even turn around. It is some of the worst suffering imaginable. And so for that reason, I really think it's important for us to shine a light on animals and to get people to think about animals differently. And the thing is here, we don't even need to get people to adopt some radical new worldview. We just need to get people to take the ethics and beliefs that they already have, such as the fact that animals shouldn't unnecessarily be facing lives of cruelty, and apply it to our behavior, what we choose to eat and drink every time we sit down at the dinner table.
And nobody has to worry about John's health because he has pictures of himself picking up very heavy pigs. How heavy is that pig? And I just looked at a photo of you earlier of you. That pig's got to be 80 pounds. And you're just holding him up in the air like it's like you're hugging a pig.
Well, you know what? When I can't find it, when I can't make it to the gym one day, you know, I just go to my local animal sanctuary and, you know, do some reps with some pigs.
I just pulled it up. You were at Rosie's Farm Sanctuary. And yeah, I have an 80-pound dog. Her name's Haley. And like, forget it. Like, if that girl doesn't jump in the car, I don't even, like, you know what I mean? Like, my other dog is, I had to get stairs. They've gotten older, so I've gotten them little stairs. She won't do the stairs. Aww. And I'm like, girl, come on. Like, you're 80 pounds. I'm not.
I don't know, Steve. I think you're underselling yourself. You go to the gym pretty often. I don't know. You could do it. You could do it. I believe in you.
Let's ask you a question that I've asked a lot of my guests. If you could go back to little boy John, who was loving animals and trying to do his best as an adult now, what would you tell him?
I would say, John, you're going to do great things, but it's going to take you a little bit too long to make the connection between the foods you eat and the animals you love. And so, hey, little John, you might want to make that consideration a lot sooner, because that'll be sparing hundreds of animals from a lifetime of suffering that you otherwise would never pay somebody else to do. So put your money where your mouth is, John.
The final three questions are questions we ask every guest. Where do people find you? How do they connect with you online is question number one.
My name is John Oberg, so they can find me at John Oberg on Twitter and Instagram, and on Facebook at John Oberg Official. And on my website, johnoberg.org, they can find out more information. And there are link trees in all my social media platforms that link to my other various social media platforms as well.
And this is your full-time gig.
Illuminating the cruelty that animals endure behind the closed doors of factory farms and slaughterhouses, primarily through social media, is my full-time job. And it brings me a lot of joy, and I'm very grateful to the folks out there who support my work day in and day out and make this work possible through monthly donations at donorbox.org/John Oberg. So thank you, and big shout out to all my supporters.
The last two questions we ask every guest, question number two, I suppose, because there's three I said, is this: who inspires you?
Who inspires me? Well, I'll tell you, my number one inspiration was my mom, the late, great Karen Oberg. She died about 8 or 9 years ago now, but she was the reason I opened up my heart to animals and incorporated them into my circle of compassion. And I am always so grateful to her and the impact that she made on me, which I can then hopefully pass on to others and let her legacy carry on. And then the people who inspire me are the folks who speak up for the animals every single day through their food choices, through their conversations, through their activism, because, you know, we aren't getting anything for that. You know, like, you don't go to the, you know, you don't have a conversation with a friend or posting on social media and somebody pats you on the back, says, good job, and then gives you something. No, we're often taking flack. We are going against the grain of society. Yet we think it's an issue that's so incredibly important that we need to use our voices to speak up for them. Everybody who does this work are absolute heroes. And I will also say one last shout out to the undercover investigators out there, the people who go undercover and through other means go to factory farms and slaughterhouses and obtain footage. They are absolute heroes to me and do this work with basically almost no recognition. And they are often spending not just minutes, it's often days, weeks, months, or even years in these places where they are suffering real consequences and seeing real cruelty for their greater good. So I am so grateful to all the folks who do this work so that folks like me and others can illuminate this suffering and shine a light on the things that are happening behind these closed doors.
And the final question is not a question, it is a statement. To finish, you can go back to anything you've already said or anything you want to say. It goes like this. Tell me something good.
Something good is that the world is becoming a better place for animals. Progress is happening slowly, and we are facing battles. Battles happen left and right in our movement. But the important thing is people are becoming more and more aware of the cruelty that animals face, and therefore more and more people are uncomfortable with what's happening to animals, and therefore they are more likely to make more compassionate choices. And so I believe that we are on an upward trajectory for animals, and I believe that one day a vegan world is within our grasp, but the speed in which we get there is entirely dependent on the hard work that people are going to do, the willingness to roll up our sleeves and do the hard work that needs to get done, whether it's through being activists or donating to activists or having conversations that you don't want to necessarily have. Whatever it is, it's so vital to helping create that world that we one day hope to get to and will get to.
Thank you, John, for sharing your good for all of us and all the animals. Next time on World Gone Good.
I was always healthy as a big person. I'm not promoting that people be unhealthy. This world that I grew up in was so about what you look like and the outsides and all these external things that have nothing to do with anything. And suddenly I found myself in a world where these women were more concerned with their insides and the light that sort of shines out of them, and they were kind, and it was a different kind of nurturing and sort of a feminine beauty ideal than I had ever known.
You definitely know her voice. Vanessa Marshall is one of the most successful female voiceover artists of all time. Her credits include everything from Wonder Woman to Star Wars Rebels to the Guardians of the Galaxy and so many video games I've lost count. And I want to brag about her all I want, and I will, because she's been my friend for going on 20 years. Vanessa's good journey began as the child of a Hollywood icon and went on to her own career as a plus-size model, all of which informed everything she has become and all the good she's focused on making happen for younger women, especially those of color, in tech and beyond. I can't wait for you to hear our oh-so-good conversation on our next all-new episode. Until then, be good.